I'm moving ahead with our project at WILS, Overcoming Barriers in Vision Care Utilization of African Americans with Diabetes. It's a pleasure to give this talk for our team. I have no financial relationships to disclose. For those who are not familiar with WILS, I have a little picture of it here, and you can see the Delaware River in the background. WILS was the first eye hospital in the United States. We have a number of different specialty and comprehensive clinics as well as departments. WILS was the site of the first ophthalmology residency. It was a gift of the Quaker merchant James WILS to the city of Philadelphia when he died in 1825. And the doors opened in 1834, so we just celebrated our 175th anniversary a few years ago. We have 8 residents per year now, with up to 13, 14, and 15 in days gone by, so we actually have the largest alumni association in the country. And we have about 25 or 30 clinical research fellows per year. And we serve as the ophthalmology department for Jefferson Medical College and Thomas Jefferson University Hospitals. This is our project team. We've got Anna Murchison and Lisa Hark here today with me. It's great to be here with you all. We have an advisory board of scientific and clinical members who've advising us, Emily Chu from the NEI, Laura Gitlin, who's and Brandon Johnson, Laura Pizzi, Jim Plum, and Barry Robner at Jefferson. Laura's now at Hopkins. And also a number of community leaders who are particularly active in the African-American community. As you know, diabetes complications involve a number of end organs. Strokes are more prevalent, heart disease more prevalent, kidney disease is more prevalent, foot and leg amputations are more prevalent. But most prevalent of all are the diabetic eye complications, the diabetic retinopathies, 25 times more, 25 times more than other end organs. Diabetic retinopathy is a retinal vascular disorder. It's the most common retinal vascular disorder in the eye, and it affects the microvasculature, causing retinal ischemia, capillary dropout, and also vascular permeability, so that small vessel disease is seen here in terms of capillary closure causing secondary neovascularization, as well as capillary leakage causing macular edema. Diagnosis requires eye examination, and the best is a dilated fundus examination. And dilated fundus examination is useful for a number of reasons. One is that it allows you to stage the disease, ranging from no diabetic retinopathy through non-proliferative disease into high-risk proliferative disease. And you can then not only treat the patient, and we know that with treatment, well over 90%, above 95% of patients can hold on to vision, so it's key to treat it. But you can also estimate how quickly the disease is going to progress and then figure out what the recommended follow-up should be. And this is from the American Diabetes Association, the National Eye Institute recommendations in 2011. Here you can see the recommended follow-up for different ascending grades and acceptable follow-up for analysis over here. And this is patients, this is the diabetic retinopathy severity. And then if you add macular edema on top of that, you get even more urgent follow-up. So our project aims then were to design and evaluate a 4-year retrospective database of diabetic patients that were seen at WILS Eye, and then and look at their follow-up, particularly their compliance with recommended follow-up, because we know how important that is, and we know that 50% or more of patients do not comply with it, and we know that compliance is particularly poor in underserved populations. And then implement a prospective targeted intervention to improve eye care follow-up in patients with diabetes. And then our third aim is now, with our multi-centered group, looking at community-based diabetes eye screening. So first we wanted to establish a retrospective database. Our primary outcome is timely dilated fundus examination follow-up. We looked at patients who were 40 years of age and older who had diabetes or diabetic retinopathy, who visited the WILS Cataract and Primary Eye Clinic, Care Clinic. This is the resident-based clinic and the primary spot of entry into the WILS eye system, or our retina service between January 1st of 2007 and December 31st of 2010. Data sources came from electronic billing data. From this, we were able to capture date of visit, date of birth, diagnosis codes, severity of diabetic retinopathy in terms of the ICD-9 coding, demographics and contact information, type of insurance, and also the referring physician or primary care provider. Medical information was fleshed out further via chart reviews. From this, we were able to, in many cases, be able to tell race and ethnicity, ocular comorbidities and medications, duration of diabetes, whether or not the patient knew or reported their hemoglobin A1C level, and then the date of the dilated fundus examination, the result, and the recommended follow-up. So here's the data development flow chart, and you see the raw data is going in, and then the developed data is coming out. And what we're basically looking at here is severity of diabetic retinopathy, when the expected dilated fundus examination would be, and when they actually were seen. Raw data included 167,662 patient accounts with 580,486 billing transactions. Our selection criteria was the first visit, as I said, between January of 2007 and December of the last day of December of 2010, 40 years of age as a cutoff, these codes, and being seen either in the general clinic or in the retina service. And our final data then yielded 2,303 patients with 8,050 visits. So we've been busy with chart review process, and I'll present some of our early data thus far. The way we looked at charts was that 10 sample pilot charts were developed for training purposes to train our reviewers. They were trained on the data capturing process. They used FileMaker Pro to enter the data. And then each of the pilot charts was reviewed and compared to gold standard, which was reviewed by a specialist, evaluated inter-rater reliability. We evaluated the inter-rater reliability among chart reviewers, and then went live with our chart review process in November 2010. And as of September 6th, when this data was compiled, 877 of those 2,302 charts had been reviewed. When we defined the index visit, we used the first date of diabetes and or diabetic retinopathy diagnosis that appeared in the Wills system, and coinciding with the first date the patient visited CPEC or the retina clinic and had the diabetic fundus examination. So here's the sample population, and you see the algorithm that we went through. This is their index visit, whether it's the same date, yes, then that visit is called the index visit. If not, then did they visit the CPEC or retina service within 30 days? You can, and as you know, it's complicated. You have to define your criteria. Then you go through a complicated algorithm to make sure that you're evaluating everybody at the same time, because it was crucial since we were using that as the start date for whether they had final follow-up, they had their next follow-up at the correct time. So that yielded 650 patients that we were able to track thus far. Mean age was 59 years, range 40 to 92. 56% were female, 44% male. 86% were from Pennsylvania, 13% from New Jersey and Delaware, and 1% other. This is in our general clinic, so this is not a big referral clinic to subspecialty people. In terms of race and ethnicity, 56% were African American. The next largest group was unknown, and 12% were Caucasian. As we move to EMR, we're hoping to get better race and ethnicity data. When we look at follow-up adherence and timeliness in these 650 patients, based on diabetic severity, we can see that here we see the total number of patients, here are the patients with follow-up, and here are the patients with timely follow-up. So 37% of patients with mild diabetic retinopathy had timely follow-up. 55% of patients with a moderate degree of retinopathy had timely follow-up. And 64% with severe retinopathy had timely follow-up. So the message, perhaps, of how bad their eye disease was may have been a factor in contributing to their adherence. Well, that's something we don't know, but that's a possible explanation of that. When we look at cumulative incidence of follow-up in And this is just the adherent patients. So we're only looking at the ones who were adherent by their diabetic retinopathy severity. You see that big bump if you've got severe diabetic retinopathy and are referred in for relatively urgent visit, that happens quite soon and then plateaus out. Moderate diabetic retinopathy, those patients are referred in to be seen and come in fairly soon too with a little bit more of a tapering of continued compliance, and the mild diabetic retinopathy kind of gradually straggle on in. When we look at factors that affect adherence rate, and this is just an early analysis, the severity of diabetic retinopathy fell out as something that impacted. Gender did not impact. Race or ethnicity, at least thus far, does not seem to be impacting. But age does seem to be impacting. The older patients have better compliance and adherence than the younger patients. When we're looking at where we want to go, the next step is to go ahead and, as we are doing, complete the 2,303 chart reviews by the spring of 2012, to conduct multivariate analyses, to examine the predictors of dilated fundus examination, follow-up adherence, including age, race and ethnicity, gender, duration of diabetes, knowledge of their hemoglobin A1C level, and what that is, ocular comorbidities, and type of insurance. Aim 2 will then be to implement a prospective targeted intervention to improve eye care follow-up in people with diabetes based on what we get out of Aim 1. And then Aim 3 is to evaluate a multi-centered, community-based diabetic eye screening program. Thank you very much.